Good day and welcome to Public Health Matters, brought to you every month by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. Tune in at noon on the third Saturday of every month for information that can help you lead a healthy life. And now, your hosts for Public Health Matters.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Public Health Matters. Thank you for joining us, brought to you by Urban One and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health on WERE 1490 AM. I am your host, Kevin Brennan. I am the communications officer for the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, welcoming you all to our June edition. As we are recording, we are in the midst of a heat advisory this week, so we will be talking about that a little later. But more importantly, I'm very excited, first of all, to have my co-host back. As we keep saying every month she comes back, but she still comes back. So it's great to have her. Suzanne Rush, our Director of External Affairs. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me again. It's a blast to be working with you.
Absolutely. Glad to have you back. And I'm very excited to have one of our colleagues here today. It is his first time on Public Health Matters, and we're excited to have him. And he is our Director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. I'd like to introduce Dr. Andre Brown. Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hi, Kevin. Good afternoon. Hi, Suzanne.
Hey, great to see you, friend.
Same.
All right. So let's tell you a little bit about Dr. Brown, and then we'll get right into the conversation. But first of all, I'd like to remind you, here on Public Health Matters, being brought to you by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, you can find us on the web at www.ccbh.net. You can call our main number. We are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30 p.m., and that is 216-201-2000. If you have a need to get in touch with our clinic, and we will mention this number several times throughout the program today, 216-201-2041. So again, we're here with Dr. Andre Brown, the Cuyahoga County Board of Health's Director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. So we're going to tell you a little bit about what Dr. Brown does. First of all, he's a native of Flint, Michigan, and I'm glad we're doing the show in June and not November, because we could have a little more to talk about at that point. But anyway, we're welcome Andre to Ohio. He comes to us having most recently served as an assistant professor in behavioral and community health sciences at the University of Pittsburgh. So he's doubling down, the University of Pittsburgh, and he's a Michigan native. So here we are. Welcome to Ohio, Dr. Brown. But anyway, his work focused on eliminating depression and mental health disparities among Black gay men. So there's a very direct connection to the work that he has previously done and the work he is doing here currently for us at the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. His passion lies in conducting community-engaged public health work and advancing health equity across public health settings. So thank you again for being here, Dr. Brown. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. And so as the Director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, you know, we hear this a lot, DEI, EDI, a lot of different acronyms, and I'm sure they amount to about the same thing. But aside from the acronym, what is the real substance here when we talk about equity, diversity, and inclusion?
Yeah, so there are some actual differences between the terms equity, diversity, and inclusion. And as you said, they're often used interchangeably, but they do mean different things. So with equity, what we're talking about is essentially giving people what they need, and particularly from a health perspective. And so we all have different needs. We have different privileges and experiences. And so equity is really around making sure that whoever you are and where you come from, you have what you need to be your healthiest. When we talk about diversity, it's really around the people in the room. So making sure that we have people from different backgrounds who represent different lived experiences as well. And then inclusion is really empowering those folks to then be able to be successful. And so allowing them to help make decisions, sharing power with them, and often just making sure that they're affirmed in who they are, whatever their sort of social identities may be.
Okay, so if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about the diversity piece for a second, because I think perceptively, a lot of people think of diversity as to how we look or where we come from. Mm-hmm. So could you get us a little deeper into that and then tell us a little more about what you value in that area?
Absolutely. So I think with diversity, it's the first step. And that's what I look at it as in terms of our equity, diversity, and inclusion work, because it really is about making sure that people of different races, of different genders, sexual orientations, and things like that are at the table so that we're hiring them, that we're serving them with our programs and services and things like that. And so we really want to make sure that, you know, the different voices are being heard, right? So we all have different experiences. We all have different needs. And so that helps to shape the kinds of programs that we do. And when we have more diversity, it allows us to understand in the totality of what our society or community needs, and then being able to then move into the equity and the inclusion parts to then serve those folks. But if you don't have the right folks at the table, then you may miss something, right? A particular need, a particular experience, a particular disparity in the case of public health. And so we really want to make sure from a diverse perspective that there's a not only social identities, but then also diversity of thought as well.
Makes perfect sense. You have to have the right voices in the room if you're going to represent.
Absolutely.
And speaking of representing, this is June. And June, we love because it's Pride Month. Mm-hmm. Will you tell us a little bit about the history and purpose of Pride Month?
Sure, absolutely. So Pride Month originally started to commemorate the Stonewall uprisings that happened in the late 60s in New York. A brief history. At the time, it was illegal, or it had just recently become not illegal, but for a long time it was illegal to serve alcohol to gay folks. And so many of the bars and clubs in New York would often be raided by the police as they were trying to, you know, catch people in the act, if you will. And so on one particular night in late June in 1969, folks had just had enough. And they decided that they didn't want to be harassed by the police. They didn't want to be arrested and things like that. And so there was resistance, right? So it was protest. It was, physical resistance against being beat up or imprisoned and things like that. And so after all of that sort of subsided, the year following, around the same time in June, was the first official Pride celebration. And that was really not only to commemorate the events of at the Stonewall Inn, but then also to be able to advocate for equity for LGBT folks.
Perfect. So that's why we say Pride March and not Pride Parade.
Absolutely.
Right?
I want to remind you, you're listening to Public Health Matters, brought to you by Urban One and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health on WERE 1490 AM. Dr. Brown, Suzanne left on a note where we mentioned another acronym, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So we have heard LGBTQ, LGBTQ+. So again, we in our world of public health, we sort of understand the gradations, but for our listeners, could you give us an idea of sort of the range of what we talk about when we use that acronym?
Absolutely. Sure. We love an acronym in public health. Let me say that.
We sure do.
True story.
We can't get enough of them.
When we say LGBT in general, it's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. The Q is often meant to mean queer or questioning. There's also additional letters that sometimes go behind it. I for intersex, A for asexual or agender. There's also two-spirit. And the plus is usually a sort of catch-all, if you will, so to include our allies, but also then to include people who may not necessarily identify as LGBT as well.
Perfect. Why do you believe that celebrating Pride Month is so important?
I think for so long, LGBTQ folks have been marginalized. Our stories have not been told. We have not been included in just every institution that you can think of, from education to entertainment. And a lot of those things sort of went unnoticed. And so just similar to like Black History Month, where we really want to be able to elevate the voices and experiences and perspectives of the LGBT community, it's a great way to do that. It also creates more community, right? Because we're not always together. Some of us are ostracized or, you know, isolated within our communities. And so Pride Month really gives us that opportunity to come together, to recognize all the great things that we've contributed to the community, and really provides safe spaces for us to be who we are as people.
So, Dr. Brown, this, even in our short time talking here, it's about representation and it's about equity, mm-hmm. right, which you mentioned, first of all. So can we talk about equity versus equal? Because I think when you're talking about trying to bring people who haven't been brought up to more of a mainstream position, mm-hmm. hypothetically, right? Mm-hmm. Not literally, but so how do we get there with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the differences between equality and equity are, equality is that we're just giving everyone the same thing, like no matter who they are, no matter what experiences or resources they've had over time. Whereas equity, as I defined earlier, is really around giving people what they need. So we know many people in our society, LGBT folks, people of color, women, have not always received the resources. They've not been able to go to schools and get certain jobs and things like that. And so if you look at it as sort of like a race, right, some people have had a huge head start in terms of being successful, being healthy, being productive members of society or being included in society. And so equity, when we're trying to give people what we need, what they need, we recognize that because of those past experiences and also current experiences of inequity or disparities and marginalization, that some people need more. And so that's what equity is recognize, not ignoring the past, but, you know, taking that into account and then really providing people with what they need.
It takes me back for a second to a time when I was younger. The Equal Rights Amendment mm-hmm. was on the seat, right, in the 70s mm-hmm. Politically. And so for that time, equal was I think, a more appropriate term, right, mm-hmm. because we were just looking for women to be able to navigate society the same way as a man mm-hmm. could, right? Mm-hmm. So, but in equity now, we understand where the gaps are. And those of us in public health, I think we talk about health disparities a lot, mm-hmm. right? Right, mm-hmm. and resultant from things like populations being marginalized and so forth. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about Pride Month, what kind of messages do you think are critical to people to kind of let them know that people like you and other people are out there to provide support? We as an agency, the Board of Health, mm-hmm. we're out here and trying to make ourselves available. But what's really critical in that messaging?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that everyone has a right to health. I don't think that it's something that's just for the privileged. I think that everyone, just because they exist, should be able to be healthy and have the resources that they need to be healthy. And we know that includes things like education, you know, jobs that pay a living wage and things like that. And so many of the disparities around jobs, healthcare are being experienced by the LGBT community. So higher rates of certain mental health disorders, HIV and AIDS, for example, violence, substance use, obesity. There's a lot of sort of challenges that exist within the community. And a lot of that has to do with a lack of access to resources. And so we really want to be able to elevate the need that exists in the community, but then also make the case for that everyone who is in the LGBT community deserves to have the things that they need to be healthy just because they exist.
It's one of the reasons the three of us, and I know our colleagues back at the office, we really love and are proud of where we work because it is such an inclusive place. And people really haven't tried us yet or talked with us yet to see that. But we hope that they do. And again, if you have questions for us, we're open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. And you're welcome to call the 216-201-2000 for general information or go to our website at ccbh.net. So, Dr. Brown, how does celebrating Pride Month benefit the community as a whole, including non-LGBTQ people?
Yeah. So as I was saying a little bit earlier, I feel like it's a human right to be who you are, right? I think there are so many things that we are denied in our society because someone has decided that we are not deserving of those things. And I think the first thing is that in your totality, your sexual orientation, your gender identity, your race, all of those things, you should be able to, you know, be proud of those things, to represent those things in all different spaces and not feel like that you have to pick and choose when you're going to be your whole self. So I think that that's part of it. I think it's also that it gives other people permission to be themselves. So when we see that other folks are living their best lives, when they are enjoying themselves, they're happy, they're socially connected, those things really are beneficial to us as a whole. And I think it also creates space for differences. We're all unique. We all are individuals, and so we want to be able to allow people to be individuals. And when we have things like Pride Month and Pride marches and Pride celebrations, it does signal to other people that it's okay to be who you are.
That's certainly a way to health and wellness, is being yourself on so many fronts. When we talk about stressors, when we talk about mental health, we talk about addiction issues, we talk about the person being okay with who they are and getting to a happy place. And you had mentioned a term a couple times when you defined some of the stereotypes, marginalizations. You mentioned gender identity. I wanted you, if you could, to explain the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity.
Sure. So when we talk about sexual orientation, what we're talking about is someone's emotional, romantic, or sexual attraction to other people. So that might be gay or bisexual or lesbian, for example. When we're talking about gender identity, this is sort of your inner concept of if you're male or female, or maybe both or neither, right? So there are some folks who are non-binary, for example, and who don't identify on this sort of spectrum of male or female. And so gender identity is more social. It's, you know, it varies by countries and things in terms of what we think is male or man or a woman, for example. But those are the main differences between those two.
We have a friend of the family who's visiting from Germany. He's a foreign exchange student, and one of the children that he's staying with at the home, you know, I sometimes babysit and dog sit for them, mentioned to him, you shouldn't wear a pink shirt or a light lime green shirt because those are, in America, those are girl colors. Mm-hmm. And he thought that was hysterical. He just was so mystified by the fact that there are stereotypes around even the color of the clothing that you wear, and it was humorous to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. I don't want to drop this and get off of it, but I do want to mention it because I think it's critical to what the message that we're trying to convey. In America, we're the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't really tend to be either in this particular venue, mm-hmm. right? We tend to present certain things with restriction, like we have freedom of religion, mm-hmm. but it comes with caveats, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, I think philosophically, those of us in this arena, we understand where we are with this, right? But it's an appeal to people, though, to, like you said, right? If we talk about religion, we're looking at being Christian, like we'll use that as a loose term, mm-hmm. but being forgiving of people and understanding who people are and be acceptive of them for who they come as, mm-hmm. right? Whatever venue that may be. Mm-hmm. So to reinforce what Suzanne was saying, from a public health perspective, that's our job, is to not be the moral police, to be judgmental at all, to just provide people with the service that they want, mm-hmm. right? So again, when you're talking about, I'd like to just for a minute sidetrack to healthcare a little bit. So when we talk about this, when people get outside of a public health venue and they get more in a private healthcare venue, and it could be insured versus uninsured, and there can be stigmas attached to certain things depending mm-hmm. on who you are. How difficult is that for people to navigate that effectively and still come out on a better end from the health impact side?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it has a huge impact on in terms of your health outcomes. Because, for example, if you go into a doctor's office and someone calls you by a name that you don't want to be identified as, or they treat you differently than other people who look or live differently than you do, you feel those things, you see those things. And our health is very intimate. Like when you think about the things that you talk to your doctors about, sometimes you have to take off your clothes and right. they're probing and prodding and all of that, you know, right?
Yeah.
So if those things happen and are happening to us, but we're going to someone who doesn't see us as who we are, that doesn't feel safe. And so you may be less likely to come back. You know, in the future, you may not disclose particular things that are really important about your health that your doctor needs to know in order to be able to provide you the best care. And so there's a lot around stigma and discrimination that we know creates barriers or walls for people to engage in health, to be honest about their health, to, you know, to do things that are healthy for them. I think there's also the mental health aspect of it. I'm a firm believer that physical health is grounded in mental health. And I don't think that you can be physically healthy without being mentally healthy. And so if you're depressed or, you know, you're anxious or what have you, that's going to be less likely that you're then going to be able to take good care of your physical health as well. And so when we add these sort of conditions, because that's what it is, right? We are putting conditions on people that say that in order for you to have the best access to health care, to be in optimal health, you have to conform to this very traditional and rigid way of being. And again, as I said, we're all unique and all different, and we all present in different ways. And so those things have to be affirmed. And so that's why equity is really important, to go back to that term again, because we're giving people what they need based upon their identities and their social experiences. And so I think it's an important concept to consider.
So I think what's interesting to me, Dr. Brown, is that we seem to be in the midst of a generational evolution, mm-hmm. right? I mean, for people who are LGBTQ and part of the community, I understand that that's a very elongated timeline. Mm-hmm. But I will say, in terms of my presence in the public health world, we have made a lot of strides in somewhat of a short period of time. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me, ideologically, philosophically, healthcare providers, right? Mm-hmm. They're a group that is going to have to adapt to the new way the society presents itself. Mm-hmm. Not a new way, but a more visible way that Absolutely. A community is making itself available to them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very appropriate, because that applies to any sort of care that we provide. I think that's a very salient point you made, is if you didn't have to tell the doctor these things, you wouldn't, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right? These are very private details that if we could go to the shelf and pick up the book and doctor ourselves, we would do it, yeah. because we don't want anybody to know some of these mm-hmm. things, right? And it's really a conditional response. The larger community has been conditioned to experience this, and so they respond in such a way, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult thing, because when we get back to the freedom and the equality, that's contrary to those concepts. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I just want to be clear about, you know, the struggle that people are facing, right? I just want our audience to understand that it's not about people doing what they want to because they want to. Mm-hmm. It's because they deserve the opportunity to be like everyone else, right? Yeah. There's quite a difference between those two things.
People are always shocked at the inclusivity and the acceptance that they receive when they come to our department. Many times we'll have folks in for a pool operator course or a food safety course or some other, you know, Cribs for Kids presentation. And they say to us, I can't believe what a wonderful place. I can't believe how accepting everyone is, how they talk to me, how my dignity was restored. Mm-hmm. And it should never be a place, when you're going to a medical practitioner, it should never be a place where you feel like you can't be truthful and can't mm-hmm. be who you are. Mm-hmm. That's a sure sign that you're probably at the wrong physician for you. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that you know that the services we provide, and you know, we're not all inclusive. We don't have primary care where we work, unfortunately, right now. But the sexually transmitted infection clinic or the general clinic, like if you would need a vaccine or immunization that we have, you are going to be treated with dignity and respect just like anybody else that comes to our place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for those of us in public health, just for a second, I think we learned a lot through COVID. Mm-hmm. I think we learned an awful lot through COVID, and then subsequently MPOX as well. Mm-hmm. I think we were able to identify what we did well, where some of our shortcomings were. And obviously there are things that are beyond our control. And, mm-hmm. and I don't want to talk about all those things, but the point is we understand where there are gaps and mm-hmm. we see the disparities and the information that you give us as a person with advanced level education, it's all evident to us. Mm-hmm. What you tell us is mm-hmm. true, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally,
so,
we've lived it. So
yes, it's evidence-based. So for those of us that are mm-hmm. in this world that we live in, if we can provide evidence and data to corroborate what we're saying, that carries a greater impact. And I'm sure that you have, you know, through your experiences, data collection is part of your portfolio, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can present this as a doctor, you know, and be able to make an impact, hopefully.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I would say, I think exposure is so important, right? And this goes back to that definition of diversity and having people at the table. The more that you can be around people who are different than you, who have different lived experiences, and then they can share those things and you can learn them, I think that it begins to erode away a lot of those sort of stigmas, discriminations that are out there. But a lot of times people want to just kind of bury their head in the sand. They don't want to hear or talk about. They want to shelter their kids from learning about things. And this is what makes our country so great, is that we have so many different people with so many different cultural experiences and perspectives that we have come together to create this sort of perfect storm of productivity, of cultural richness, or what have you. And I think with COVID and with MPOX and with some of the other health problems that we've encountered, we've been able to hear more of these stories because folks are coming out and saying, like, this is not working for us. And here are the reasons why it's not working for us. And here's how it can work better. But if you don't allow yourself to interact with people who are different than yourselves or to learn about cultures and livelihoods that are different, then it's going to be easier for you to be like, oh, those people don't deserve to be healthy, or they don't deserve whatever other kind of resource that we know people need to live their best lives.
And aren't we always fighting that stigma of those people? Whenever we hear those people, a red flag goes up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because we want, it's you people, me people, we people. We're all the same people. So we if the person's got a pulse, we want to help them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So Dr. Brown, the first of one of the $64,000 questions. So how do we build an atmosphere of inclusion if we all have our own individual personal beliefs and some people are inclusive and others aren't, and we have different religious beliefs that some people adhere to and it's very guiding for their life, and other people are casual, some people, right? There's varying degrees in that. So when you talk about getting everybody in the room and trying to be representative, it's not that we only want like-minded people, right? We want ideally, we want representation from everybody, so we're doing the best we can for everyone. But given today's climate, how do we bring everybody together and still make progress?
Yeah, I think the first thing, as I mentioned before, is that recognizing that everyone deserves to live their best lives. And I think if you start there, it's a great foundation for then thinking about how do you create the space for everyone to be healthy. I think respect is important as well. So, you know, treating people how you want to be treated, not being mean or malicious and, you know, adversarial just for the sake of being it. And then I think also putting yourself in other people's shoes. So there's, for all of us, we have a mix of privileges and disabilities. I'm not sure if that's a word, but I'm going to use it.
Okay, right. Very good. We'll look that up while you're talking.
Right. And so, you know, there are going to be things about you that are marginalized, whether it's because you're a woman or because you're a person of color or you're a sexual minority, for example, an immigrant or what have you. So think about what it would mean if someone was to say, oh, well, you don't deserve health care because you're a woman, or you don't deserve, you know, to be healthy because you're from this particular side of town or what have you. So when you start to think about yourself and say, how would I feel if someone passed laws and yelled bad names at me, denied me services and things like that because of who I am, because of something that I didn't choose, you know, it's just how I was born. I think if you can do that and have that level of empathy, I think it would allow for us to create a society that's just more conducive to us being happy and healthy.
A lot of the problems that we hear about are hate speech or hate behavior, exclusive behavior. So I'm wondering, what active role should an organization play when offensive comments occur?
Well, I think you need to correct it. I think because there's always the perception that if someone doesn't say that something's wrong, then you believe it's okay or that it's right. And so I think you have to say that's not okay. You have to call it out, or sometimes we say calling in because, you know, you don't want to just be like, oh, you're a terrible person and, you know, you're stupid and, you know, all that. But you want to say this is harmful. Here are the reasons why it's harmful, and here's how it's counterproductive to who we are trying to be as an organization. I think educating folks is also really important. So allowing people to learn more about people who are different than them or cultures that are different than them is a thing. And then I think also organizationally, you have to create policies that prohibit discriminatory language and behavior. It would be great if everyone would just be nice, right, and wouldn't be problematic. But we know not everyone is willing to do that just on their own. And so sometimes you have to regulate and legislate things that will allow people to not be so problematic and hateful.
Very good. And you taught us with some of our equity training at the Board of Health about some people recognizing that what they're doing is wrong and some people not being aware. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think, if you've always, for example, if you've always lived in a sort of heterosexual guided world where heterosexuality is a norm, it's what's celebrated, is what you see in terms of marriages and weddings and all those things that we celebrate or whatever, and you've never had exposure to anything else, you may think that this is the way to do things, because everything around you has affirmed that. Nothing has challenged that perspective at all. And so when you, again, this is going back to diversity, right? When you have different people at the table, but also when you're including them and allowing their voices to actually be heard, it then can challenge you to understand that maybe what I have believed my whole life is not true. Maybe the things that I was taught as a child were wrong, right? There is a different perspective about things. And so I think that that is a lot, again, exposure, allowing yourself to just be open-minded about certain things is a really great way to erode away some of that sort of stigma and discrimination that we know people have.
It's surprising. It's so surprising. We talk about hate speech, and I was reading some literature about helping some people through Cleveland Reads, and that it said between the ages of 7 and 9, we learn about 70% of all the words we'll ever know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I've learned so much just with our equity, diversity, inclusion work of terminology that I was never familiar with. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm a Rhodes Scholar by any means, but I do a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising to me that there's such a slant with mainstream media, with books that I read. And so that's one way, is what you put in, you know, that whole saying, garbage in, garbage out. So it's, like you said, exposing yourself to different people, different opinions, and just being open to learning so that you feel comfortable.
Absolutely.
It's interesting to me how we harken back to childhood, because it's the dichotomy or the duality of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
When we're young having been a parent myself, you encourage tolerance and you encourage togetherness and community among children, right? You want them to learn from each other and share their experiences and broaden their horizons.
Mm-hmm.
But then they get to a certain age, and then between the household and the society, they learn different things, right?
Absolutely.
So I think your point about being active and speaking up when you see something that in public health, sometimes we call them injustices, right? Everything from a microaggression to an injustice, that there's a lot in between there.
Mm-hmm.
But even being dismissive of an individual, as you mentioned, you go to a healthcare provider and then they don't refer to you in the way that you want to be referred to.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well be disposable, right? Right. I mean, that takes away your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an exaggeration to say that, you know, as someone who hasn't had that happen to them, I couldn't imagine my reaction. I would probably think to myself, there's a million other doctors and I'm not going to sit here, you know, and tolerate that, because it's not the kind of thing that you're paying for it.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely
taking time off work. You're going somewhere. So it's not just about what you're doing as an individual. It's what you're doing from a resource standpoint that is just such a non-productive experience. But again, we want to remind you can call our clinic where our goal is to provide inclusive service to everybody that comes by. As Suzanne said, remind you the number one more time, 216-201-2041. If you'd rather not call and you'd rather get in touch with us via email, you can do that by emailing ccbhnurse@ccbh.net.
Yeah, we absolutely want to be inclusive and overcome some of the barriers. And we talk about barriers that LGBTQ people face to receiving good health care and achieving optimal health. I wonder, what are some of the things that they would face?
Oh, where do I start?
He's got his list, folks. He's pulling out the list right now.
He's got the big list.
Where do I start? Well, I think one of the things we've talked very clearly about is just stigma and discrimination. And whether that be from the doctor, whether that's the receptionist at the front desk, the pharmacist, or what have you, there are lots of people who don't treat others fairly, who are discriminatory in the ways in which they interact with folks. So that's certainly one thing. I think a lack of culture. Culturally responsive healthcare services. So being able to understand what are the particular needs. So for example, for myself as a gay man, there are certain kinds of health needs that I have. And so if I have to go into the doctor, they don't understand. I have to tell them what to do as if I'm the doctor, right? Like it's troubling, because you know that there are other people who don't have these experiences, right? That they come in and they get the kind and level of care that they need. So that's definitely one thing. I think also a lack of data, right? So there are not always forms that collect information about people's sexual orientation or gender identity. So we don't know whether or not they're receiving adequate care, whether we are getting better you know, those types of things. And then there's also cost, right? We know healthcare is expensive, and related to that is employment. So many LGBT folks have, and particularly transgender folks, have trouble with getting meaningful employment that pays a living wage. So again, that makes it difficult for you to pay for your medications or your doctor copay, those types of things. And I think also stable housing is something that is also a challenge in the LGBT community. And we know that having stable housing helps you with maintaining your medication adherence, and then also, you know, just keeping you out of the elements, for example, which can make you get be more likely to get sick. And then finally, I would just say laws that are prohibiting or limiting gender-affirming care are also some things that are real barriers to people getting the kind of health care that they need to have optimal health.
Excellent. Excellent examples. Thank you, Dr. Brown. I know as a person who worked for a long time doing epidemiological investigations, where we investigate outbreaks of illness, whether they were grand ones like H1N1 or COVID, or whether they were smaller ones like individual foodborne illness outbreaks or cases, I can tell you that when we ask probing questions in public health and even at medical practitioners about someone's sexual identity or sexual orientation, it's because we want to get the data that really tells us how populations are being affected. I used to think when I was young and naive that if you ask those kind of questions, you were just being nosy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that to give the best care, we have to have data and understand where people are at and how we best serve them. So the two things that I love about public health evolution over time, and you know, I've been doing this 31 years, and I can tell you in the beginning we didn't gather much personal data on folks, and we do now. And that's another thing. It's HIPAA protected information. It is secure, whether it's at a MinuteClinic, your doctor's office, a surgeon, or public health clinic. We want that information to provide the best care. And we also want to be identity affirming. If someone says that they want to be called something other than what we think is their natural, you know, biological name, we want to be treating them with dignity and respect.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind you that you're listening to Public Health Matters on WERE 1490 AM, brought to you by Urban One and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. Dr. Brown, I wanted to follow up on your conversation with Suzanne there. One of the things that struck me is, in public health, we sort of face a similar barrier with health literacy, mm-hmm. where we don't provide a wide enough scope. Generally speaking, I'm talking about the healthcare system in America. We don't provide a wide enough scope of culturally appropriate services, so people shuffle in and out of the system without having clarity about sometimes what they're taking, mm-hmm. why they're taking it, how many times a day they should take it, what are other confounding medicines that could cause them harm if they do take it, what could happen to them if they stop, mm-hmm. right? There's a great deal of lack of clarity. There's a lack of clarity, mm-hmm. you know, for people who don't understand English as a primary language sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So for those of you out there listening who are trying to get to where we are in terms of the LGBTQ population, think of it in terms of this. We've all, in America, we all know people who don't speak English as their first language. Mm-hmm. So navigate those experiences with people and understand how that affects you, or when you've witnessed it, or when you've been with somebody who's had that experience, or if you're, you know, in school, you grew up with somebody like that, right? You know firsthand how that goes, mm-hmm. right? So I think when we talk back, when I mentioned about the sort of the cultural evolution, I think my daughter's who's in her 20s, her generation is much more tolerant, I think, much more accepting, much more broad-minded in terms of different people, right? Mm-hmm. People who are different than them. They understand that we weren't all born in the same place and had the same privileges and the same conditions and the same opportunities and the same and assets, right? Mm-hmm. Things that we could work with. So it's interesting to me to go back to that thought process that as we continue to go through this, we might learn a lot more from our young people than mm-hmm. we ever have, right? Mm-hmm. Because typically the older generation takes sort of the satisfaction in passing it down. Well, I think we've hit a plateau and we're declining, quite mm-hmm. frankly, in terms mm-hmm. of the way we should be operating. So it'd be fascinating to me to see if our young people can bring us more back to the front.
Yeah, and I would say they have. I mean, I think when we think about who's in charge politically and things like that within our country, it tends to be older folks, right? And so some of the laws, marriage equality, for example, that have come along have been sort of championed or at least enacted by older folks. So I'm not the ones who are like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think you certainly can. And I think part of that is is because of the conversations and sort of public discourse that we've been able to have. And so, again, these things are not in the margins anymore. They're in mainstream. We can turn on CNN or Fox News or whatever and see it there. We can see it in movies and the TV shows that we watch. And so, again, as we create more opportunities for people to be themselves, to live their best lives, we can then see, oh, they love the same ways that we do. It might be a different gender than what I love, but, you know, they want the same things. They care about their kids. They want to be healthy. They want to have fun. So I think that, you know, certainly younger folks have been more exposed, you know, they tend to be more tolerant. But I would also say for the millennials, the Gen X, the boomers even, that there's also been an evolution that we've seen where people have become more accepting and affirming.
Certainly at the Pride events that we participated in, all of us have done that over the last few years, we saw a lot more generations represented, and it's so healthy to see that families are really helping their folks. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the opposite, because unfortunately that's not always the case.
True.
What would you say are the long-term consequences if we ignore the barriers that LGBTQ folks face to receiving health care and achieving their optimal health?
So I think from a health perspective, we're going to continue to see ongoing health disparities. So people in the LGBT community are more likely to have poor mental health outcomes such as depression and anxiety, substance use disorders, cancer, obesity, HIV, STIs. These are just some of the health outcomes that we know are more prevalent in the LGBT community. And so I think if we're not providing the kind of healthcare and services, social services, and just overall human rights to the LGBTQ community, then we're going to continue to see those disparities as they are. I think the other thing is just a lack of productivity and creativity. Like, I know for myself that when I'm stressed out or worried about something, like, I'm not at my best. Sure. Like, I don't always think as clearly. I'm not always as productive. I'm not always as friendly or what have you the case may be. And so when you think about someone chronically facing those things, it severely diminishes their ability to be able to not only be healthy, but then also contribute to the overall well-being of our country and our society.
Just today, I was taking a conflict management course. The Board of Health kindly, all the people in supervision, they get to take a class. And it's really an interesting six-part series. And they showed this curve. And at the top of the curve was when you're in the most angst during a really bad conflict. And there's sort of this up and down emotionally. Mm-hmm. And on the bottom was a productivity curve that was completely conversely opposite. Meaning, if you're up there in crisis mode and your adrenaline is pumping, you are not thinking freely. You're not problem solving. You're not being creative. And that's why de-escalation is so important, to bring people down when they're upset. And I would just say that to all businesses, anybody who's listening today, that if they need help with that, there's wonderful books, there's wonderful management strategies, there's TED Talks. There's a lot of way that don't mean you have to necessarily take a college course. I mean, you don't have to be as learned as Dr. Brown over here, but you can empower yourself and your team, especially your HR folks, to really be inclusive, because you're missing out on some wonderful, everyone's complaining there's no good employees out there, but you're missing out on a population of folks who just need an opportunity to thrive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
So, Dr. Brown, I would say loosely that the LGBTQ population has become the latest poster child for us in public health, who are yelling it as loudly as we can that proactive and preventive care for everybody is the way. Mm-hmm. It is the way for all. That is an equity-based approach to bringing everybody up in the way that they need to be, right? Because mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. If any of our members of our audience are, you know, not quite following our train of thought or not quite there where we are yet, think of it in terms of, if you have to, a strictly a financial piece. Mm-hmm. The billions, with a B, folks, billions of dollars we would save if we changed the way that we look at healthcare in America. And I'm not here talking, you know, politically about where we should go. All I'm saying is we in public health know that if everybody had the opportunity to be healthy, we all would be healthier. Mm-hmm. And we'd save ourselves a lot of money, effort, time. We'd have more happiness and enrichment in our lives. So when we talk about things from a public health perspective, we're not trying to be Pollyanna here. Mm-hmm. Dr. Brown is certainly not talking about something that is unrealistic or visionary. Mm-hmm. It may have been at one time, but now it is very practically applicable, and it is, right as he said, very mainstream, very evident, And it does show a willingness for our society to bring this issue along in however jagged that road may be. Mm-hmm. We are at least moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And our research shows that the public health programs that have been enlisted over the last quarter century have increased lifespans by 30 to 35 years. So we know that we are making positive changes in public health. And if you ever have been interested in a career with us, if you are a nurse or a social worker or a dietitian or a sanitarian or an attorney, an administrator, we have so many positions available. If you're into data and informatics, all the IT, all that stuff, we're always hiring. And great opportunities for folks and a great place to work. You can retire after 30 years of great work and really feel a sense of accomplishment. So we do want to encourage you to check out ccbh.net/jobs because there are opportunities on our board all the time. Go ahead, Ken.
I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to Public Health Matters on WERE 1490 AM brought to you by Urban One and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. So Dr. Brown, let's lighten it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. We've gotten down there a little bit and examined our souls and society a bit. So let's get back to one of the reasons why you're here. Let's talk about LGBTQ people having fun and getting out and enjoying their environment. Tell us a little bit about what you experienced at Pride. What's your takeaway from Cleveland Pride? I should be more specific. You attended Cleveland Pride.
Sure, absolutely. So we did some tabling there for a couple of our EDI program and then also our ending HIV program as well. We were both out there. And it was just joy. I mean, it was so good to see people just be themselves. You know, folks that were not necessarily the most social or socially connected, you could see that they had found community. You know, so the way that they dressed or the music and dancing and call and response from folks who were on the stage. I mean, it was just a really great celebration. And again, you know, I think sometimes there's this misperception that Pride is about sex and people want to just be naked and all of those things. But it really was around, as I said, humanity and affirming that we belong and that we matter and that there's community and that we're not alone. And so I think that affirmation is something that we can take with us throughout the rest of the months of the year, throughout the rest of June, outside of Pride weekend, to really be able to say that who we are matters, that we have a right and a responsibility to stand up for ourselves, but also other people who are looking like us, and to continue to move forward. Because there's going to be, you know, forward steps and some backward steps that are going to happen. It's not this linear trajectory towards liberation, but if we keep at it, we can really get to where we need to be. And so that's what I saw when I was at Pride.
Well, I didn't have the pleasure this year. Unfortunately, I was traveling, but I did go to the Brecksville Broadview Heights High School event. That was wonderful, but way bigger than last year. It probably tripled in size. It was representing St. Matthew's Church in Brecksville. And I'll tell you what, talk about inclusivity. You're absolutely right. The band, just the folks there on display, the games, the kids, it was wonderful. I can tell you that a lot of the congregations that were there, a lot of the businesses that were there were really stepping up. And that makes good financial sense. Inclusivity, when you start opening your doors and being proud of who you serve, I think that's just more families having more fun, spending more money with, you know, inside mm-hmm. your doors. I think it's a lucrative proposition for folks in business, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I think as an acknowledgement to the BBH Pride, well, another acronym, Brecksville Broadview Heights Pride Parade, we'd like to give a shout out to Mayor Sam. He did an excellent job of interacting with people at that event. He was very accepting. I know that, you know, behind the scenes, there's probably some things that he had to do to establish some integrity for this event and really give it a platform. And so we really appreciate him and his colleagues for making that effort.
He's a wonderful person. He came to our booth and spent considerable time with us, and he tried to win the Afghan. He did not. There was no bribery happening. We had an Afghan, a beautiful Pride Rainbow Afghan that one of our parishioners made, and there was just so much connectivity with families. And I'm proud to say that my church, as well as my employer, really support LGBTQ families and their health and their well-being.
So, Dr. Brown, we're going to wrap it up with you, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity. You've provided a great deal of education for our staff and trying to incorporate these principles of equity, diversity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So if you had a minute for a takeaway for our audience, what would you offer them?
I would say, I guess, a couple of things I would say. One is just to love on each other. I think that when we begin and end with love, we can transform so many things that seem dark. And so when we see another human being, and really that's who they are, I think it allows us to then want the best for them. I think part of it is then also advocating for one another, and particularly for people who are of privilege, to be able to advocate for folks who don't have as much privilege, to say that they belong, that they matter, that they deserve. I think that those things are really important. There's a quote by Fannie Lou Hamer, who is a civil rights activist from the 60s and 70s, and she says, nobody is free until everybody is free. And so I want to encourage us to think about that, that even if you may enjoy all the privileges that are out there, that there are still people who don't have those and they need them, and you have the ability to be able to advocate for those things. And then finally, particularly because we're in an election year, but just every year, vote. Right. You want to have politicians in office who are making decisions for the best of everyone and not just a particular faction of folks. And so I think if you can love folks, if you can advocate folks and use your voice, whether that be at the ballot box or just out in the community, I think we can really transform our community and our society into even more greatness.
Excellent. Well, thank you. That is Dr. Andre Brown with some words of wisdom for us. He is the Director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. We thank him for stopping by to talk to us. So we're going to switch gears now, Susanna. We're going to talk a little bit environmental health. We're going to get back to your wheelhouse, right? We're going to get off my step here and get more into yours. But so when we talk about what's happening in summer, you've worked in a variety of programs. You've worked in water, you've worked in lead prevention, you've worked in food safety. You understand the impact of what can happen here in the summer. But I think the one thing that we want to talk about primarily for people, because it's so broad-based, would be food safety.
Sure.
So we have a few minutes to talk about that. So what should be some, maybe the handful of considerations that people, as they're picnicking, barbecuing, even putting things in a cooler and traveling over to your friend's house or your family's house, what should we be thinking about?
Well, we want to remember that most foods that are prepared as far as processed or cook, so whether it's chopping produce or it's cooking something or it's even mixing a tuna salad or macaroni salad cold, once you've processed them, they require refrigeration. We want to keep them 41 degrees Fahrenheit or lesser. And most foods that are cooked hot need to be maintained hot at or above 135 degrees. And in either case, you're going to need an instant read thermometer, either dial or digital, to stab that food in the thickest part and see if it's hot enough or cold enough. So keeping it 41 or lesser, 135 or hotter. And a lot of times in the summer, because, you know, we don't all have refrigerated vehicles to travel with, we're going to pack a cooler with ice. Remember that ice used for refrigeration can never be used for food. So if you've packed cans, bottles, meat, cheese, produce, anything with ice around it, that ice is dirty. And you can't use that inside somebody's cup. And if you are putting those foods in the same unit, the ready-to-eat food, like cans of pop and cheese and lettuce, have to sit on the top, and raw meat should be on the bottom with several layers. It's best to just keep those separate.
Okay, so let's talk about if Dr. Brown goes out in the backyard and he decides he's going to entertain you and me and some of our colleagues, and he's a master chef, because I know he likes to bake and he likes to cook. So we're going to ask him to make us, let's say, some chicken and some steaks, for instance. Okay, we're not going vegan. We're going full meat here. So what should be some considerations as he moves the food from the refrigerator to prepare it to take it outside, to put it on the grill, and to bring it back in? What are some of those critical steps in that process?
Well, first and foremost, he's a good friend, and I'm going to tell him to hit the sunscreen. Because regardless, I don't care if you're the fairest of the fair or the darkest of the dark complexion, I want sunscreen on you in this temperature, and I want hydration in you. So we want to keep you hydrated, because he's going to be near a hot grill. But on his way out, he's going to have either tongs or spatula to put stuff onto the hot grill. And then after the bloody things or the raw things leave that plate and those utensils, that goes back in the kitchen or a bus tub out of the way, the hands are washed, and before that stuff comes off the grill, it's going to have a clean utensil and a clean platter. Many times outbreaks are associated with raw touching ready to eat. We don't want to do that. Okay.
So let's talk about one of the most critical pieces of food safety that you taught me is the right tool for the right job. So as he's coming up on thinking the food is done, he's not going to press on it. He's not going to look at it closer. He's not going to get his face close. How is he going to understand that it's done?
He's going to absolutely positively cook it to the right temperature. When in doubt, 165 degrees at the thickest part of the food. That's the catch-all, right? Whether you're reheating or cooking the first time. But for your burgers, you don't want to cook rare for little kids or for immunocompromised people like seniors or persons with medical, you want to make sure you hit the 155 degrees in the thickest part of the food. But truthfully, most foods you grill can handle that 165. Things like ribs and chicken get better. They get more tender the more you cook them. So you're really not going to hurt it any.
Okay. So now when we talk about traveling, very quickly, the need for multiple coolers. Could you address that, please?
Sure. So what we like to say is all the stuff that's refrigerated and ready to eat, things like pop or juice pouches or milk in containers, bury them in ice. Just absolutely bury them in ice. Let people have to dig for them. They'll be super cold, deliciously fresh. And that ice afterwards is ice that goes down a drain. It's not ice we want you to pour on the ground. Remember that cans and containers are touched by lots of hands before they get to you. So never eat that ice. That ice shouldn't go in the cup. There should be a separate bagged ice with a scoop so people aren't scooping with their hand that's used for inside beverage cups. And finally, that third one should handle all the raw stuff. If you have raw meat, raw hot dogs, raw chicken, all the raw should be separate from the ready-to-eat, separate from the beverage ice.
Very good. Well, folks, I think you're armed with the handful of facts you need to have a safer summer. If you'd like, you can call us at any time, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. with questions. And someone like Suzanne or one of our sanitarians will get on the phone with you and walk through this if necessary. If you have questions, 216-201-2000. We remind you our clinic is at 216-201-2041, or you can reach them via email at ccbhnurse@ccbh.net. Like to thank our guest, Dr. Andre Brown, our Director of Diversity or Equity, Diversity and Inclusion, for stopping by and sharing his knowledge and experiences with us. We hope for those of you who are listening who went to Pride, you had a great time. We hope that you continue to enjoy the rest of your summer, and we'll talk to you next time on Public Health Matters.
This has been Public Health Matters, brought to you every month by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. For more information about today's topics and more, you can always visit the Cuyahoga County Board of Health online at ccbh.net. Tune in on the third Saturday of next month at 12 noon for the next edition of Public Health Matters.